Hey, well, good evening. Good to be back in Eretz Yisrael. And we pick up again this week with the Parsha of Korach. And Korach actually, in addition to featuring in the Parsha, also is the topic of a Mishnah, famous Mishnah, in the fifth Perek of Pirkei Avos. But there, the Mishnah outlines the various different kinds of machloksim. And basically, there are two. There is machlokas l'shem shamayim, machlokas for the sake of heaven, machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim. And not for the sake of heaven. And the Mishnah then gives us classic examples of both types of machlokas. And it asks, what is an example of a machlokas l'shem shamayim? Hillel v'shamay. It doesn't get more l'shem shamayim than Hillel and Shammai. They argue about many things, and yet it's all l'shem shamayim. They remain the best of friends. And machlokas l'shem shamayim is really geared at arriving at the truth, and therefore it should never become a personal. That's the hope. And what is the machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim? What's the classic example? It says the Mishnah, ze Korach v'chol adoso. It's Korach and his Ada and his whole group. And although there is much to discuss in this Mishnah, but something that the Meforshim pick up on is that there seems to be an asymmetry here. Because when it came to discussing the first type of machlokas, which is l'shem shamayim, so the Mishnah gives us both sides, Hillel and Shammai. I mean, they're the two sides who are arguing with each other. And therefore, in the other case, one would have expected, similarly, for the Mishnah to say, and what's the case of machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim? That's Korach and Moshe. But it doesn't give us the two sides. It gives us everyone on the same side, Korach v'chol adoso. So what's behind that, again, if we could refer to it that way, that lack of symmetry? One could say balabatishly that you can't include Moshe in the machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim. Moshe is yes l'shem shamayim. It's only Korach who's not l'shem shamayim. But we see that the Mefarshim have other things to say as well. As one rabbi told me, although in principle it takes two to have a machlokas, but if you're determined, you can do it all by yourself. So why is it that it's Korach v'chol adoso? So this question is addressed by Rab Aaron Volkin. Rab Aaron Volkin was the Rav of Pinsk, a great halachic authority, Chuvas Zakan Aaron, and on the Masechtos, Beis Aaron, and you also have his drushas, Metzach Aaron, and truly one of the greats in pre-war Europe. And Rav Aaron Volkin says as follows, as we alluded to, the main difference between machlokas l'shem shamayim and not l'shem shamayim, what is the goal? Is the goal to arrive at the truth? Or is it the goal to vanquish the other side? And as one Chacham put it, the difference between the two is that a machlokas l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, is a machlokas geared at discovering what is right. Machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim is a machlokas geared at discovering who is right. As the Briskers would say, it's a difference between a cheftza and a gavra. Is the focus the topic at hand, or the ascendancy of one side over the other? And not only does that give you a different goal in terms of the machlokas, but it also can have its implications and ramifications for the way that the machlokas itself is conducted. If the goal is to outdo the other side, to crush them, then one may resort to other means or techniques, arguing techniques, in order to do that. Which leads us to a simple question. How many people does it take to have each side represented? And here it depends. If it's l'shem shamayim, so then let two people discuss it, debate it, argue it out, and come to their conclusions. But if it's shelo l'shem shamayim, One of the symptoms of a machlokas that's not l'shem shamayim is it likes to attract crowds. Because the more you have together with you arguing or chanting or doing whatever, so the more you are prevailing over the other side. And therefore, says Rav Aaron Volkin, the Mishnah is really intimating, helping us to identify certain symptoms in these two types of machlokasim. Hillel and Shammai had many, many talmidim. But when the time came for machlokas, neither brought their talmidim with them for safety in numbers or to outshout the other side. Just Hillel and Shammai, that's all you need. Which is not the case in a machlokas, Korach and Moshe. If it was really l'shem Shammayim, Korach could have approached Moshe by himself and discussed the matter and debated and said his point of view. And therefore, Korach v'chol adoso is a surefire marker for machlokas l'shem Shammayim. There is no Korach without his Ada, without a group of people, and they get together and they're trying and be impressive and imposing. Indeed, according to the Medrash, when Korach has his famous question about the treles, if a talis is entirely treles, does it need a string of treles? According to the Medrash, he actually had all of his men wear garments made entirely of treles. What is that helping? How does that enable him to more accurately arrive at the truthful answer? It doesn't. But in terms of making a production, of making an impression, I mean, that it's optics. Machlokas shel l'shem shamayim will factor in optics. If it's l'shem shamayim, so then it's just the topic itself. And this is what we learn by the Mishnah referring to machlokas Korach v'chol adoso. If you're a Korach, you need an Ada to conduct your machlokas. It's reminiscent, one may say, of something that is pointed out by Rabbi Frohl HaKohen miHamburg, one of the greats at the time of the Vilna Gaon, in his Sefer Mar Peloshim. When we come to the four sons on Seder night, so one of the questions gets a very bad representation. when the son asks, Ma ha'avoda hazos lachem, and we call him a Rasha. And many Mefarshim want to ask, I mean, how is he so different than the question of the Chacham? The Chacham also asks, Maha Eidus, Ma'chukim, Ma'mishpatim, Ma'shatziv Hashem Elokeinu Eschem, right? What's all these mitzvahs that Hashem has commanded you? There are nuanced differences and there are significant differences, but this is the question that everyone asks. How come for almost identical questions, one is called a Chacham and one's called a Rasha? And what the Mar Peloshin has to say, Rabbi Frohl HaKohen miHamburg, is that the verb is key. When it comes to the question of the Chacham and of the Tam, of course, one can't talk about the question of the Ein Yodea Lishol, he's of the non-questioning persuasion. But when it comes to the other questions that are asked, the Chacham and the Tam, the verb used is ki yish'alcha bincha, when your son will ask. But the question that is attributed to the Rasha does not say ki yish'alcha bincha, it says ki yomru aleichem b'neichem, when your sons will say to you. But then what comes out is a question. But questions are not said, questions are asked. So why does it not say ki yish'alu aleichem b'neichem, like it says ki yish'alcha bincha? That's the first indicator that there's question is not as sincere as it seems. Sincere questions are asked. Insincere questions are said because they're more statements and pronouncements and slogans, perhaps, than they are actual questions. And moreover, says Rabbi Farla Cohen, look at another aspect. Kish al-cha bincha is in the singular. But ki yomru aleichem b'neichem is in the plural. A Rasha doesn't like to ask a question by himself. A Rasha likes crowds because then he gets support and it's a different dynamic and there's aspects of the antagonism that can only really be expressed through a crowd. And therefore, once again, we see in the same way that Korach's machlokas could only work if it's v'chol adoso, together, bolstered by his team, by his corner. So too, the question of the Rasha only comes out if there's a number of them together, ki yomru aleichem b'neichem. So this is the classic comment of Rabbi Aaron Volkin with regards to the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. On the one hand, on the pure side, you have Hillel and Shammai, but on a symptom of the impure side is Korach v'chol adoso. Continuing on this theme, one of the basic parshanut questions in the opening pasuk of our parsha, which reads, just to have the pasuk before us, this is in Perek Tet Zayin, pasuk Aleph, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohas ben Levi, Korach took ben Yitzhar ben Kohas ben Levi, v'dosan v'aririm b'nei Eliav, dosan v'aririm the sons of Eliav, v'om Peles b'nei Uvein. So that's the whole pasuk. And it's full of details. It's just missing one thing. It doesn't say what they took. It just says they took. There's a lot of takers, but there isn't anything taken. And the pasuk just keeps going. You have these other 250 men, and this is like the big mystery now. What is it that they took? So much so that the Maskila David, Rabbi David Pardo, suggests that this is what Rashi is alluding to in his opening comment. Rashi has a very enigmatic first comment in Parshas Korach. On the words Vayikach Korach, says Rashi, Parsha zo yofa nidreshes b'medrash Rabbi Tanchuma. This Parsha has been expounded very nicely in the Medrash Rabbi Tanchuma. That's Rashi's opening comment. But when you think about it, it's most unusual. I mean, what does Rashi mean to say? Firstly, is the understanding that this parsha is darshaned very well? What about the other parshas? And moreover, Rashi's job is to explain Pshuto Shel Mikra, or to resolve Pshuto Shel Mikra. Pshat questions. Rashi's job is not to direct us to nice midrashim. So from a certain point of view, the more benign the comment is, the more alarmed we become. And Rashi should get down to business. What does Vayikach mean, as he does in the next part? But Rashi makes it as an introductory comment. It's a very, very, very nicely expounded, this parsha in Medrash Rabbi Tanchuma. How does that fit into Rashi's Pirush on the Torah? But the Maskila David says that Rashi loves all midrashim. The reason why he's mentioning Medrash Tanchuma here is because he is addressing this very point. His quoted words are Vayikach Korach. It says Korach took, and it doesn't say what he took. So we will yet have what to say. But you know what the Medrash Tanchuma says? It says what we mentioned before. He dressed them all up with these taluses that were made of tcheles. Is that alluded to in the pasuk? From a certain point of view, it's the pshat in the pasuk, or at least it's very drash friendly in the pasuk. Because whenever you have a verb and you don't have a noun, so presumably the reference is to the most recently mentioned noun. Well, what is the most recently mentioned noun? What comes just before the beginning of Korach? The end of Shalach. And what's at the end of Shalach? Tzitzis. This is Rashi's way of providing a preliminary answer to this question. You know what he took? Pasuk doesn't say. Well, look in the Medrash Tanchuma. He took tzitzis. And that now, the verb of Vayikach is relying on the tzitzis mentioned in the end of Parshas Shalach. But for those who do not wish to go backwards into the end of Shalach, we're left with not knowing what it is that Korach took. Says the Malbim, when we consider Korach's group, Korach's band, we will realize that they don't really have much to do with each other. By which we mean, they're not even really looking for the same thing. And in order to understand how that is, let us consider why it is that these specific groups feel that they should get the avodah. Because by the time we finish, we will see that their claims actually counter each other. which means the reason that one group feels they should get the avoda is actually an argument that the other group shouldn't get the avoda, and they're part of the same team. So one has to wonder, if they're not really in full agreement with each other, why are they together? That we have to see. But first, with regards to Korach, the Malbim explains Korach is making a bid for Kohen Gadol. Al Shumma, on what grounds? Well, Korach reasons as follows. If you know the order of the generation that preceded them, so Korach is the son of Yitzhar. Yitzhar is the second brother after Amram. The brothers, Kahath's sons, are Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. And therefore, Korach reasons that in his father's generation, Amram was the oldest. Therefore, if Moshe, who is a son representing Amram, will be the leader of the people, so be it. So Amram has been represented through Moshe. Next in line, for the other position of quote-unquote authority or prominence, should then be a representative of the next son. Amram is the oldest, so his son is the leader. Yitzhar is next, so his son should be next. And Korach is the oldest of Yitzhar's sons. And what's fascinating about this is that this is now the answer to the question. The pasuk says, Vayika Korach, Korach took. And it doesn't tell us what he took. It just describes his lineage. He's the son of Yitzhar. Says the Malbim, that's what he took. In other words, he took the fact that he is the son of Yitzhar, because that is his claim to the avoda. Moving on, who's next? Dasan and Avira. And they are Bnei Eliav together with On. I mean, On's involvement was short-lived in this machlokas, but Dasan and Avira and On, they are Bnei Reuven. Says the Malbim, descendants of Reuven have an altogether different claim to the Avoda. After all, Reuven is the Bechor. Reuven is the firstborn. As far as they're concerned, it's Reuven's descendants who should do the Avoda. Now, you might say, well, that may have been in days of yore, but Reuven fell from grace because of whatever happened with the Maaseh Bilha, so Yaakov demoted him. So firstly, Bnei Reuven might not be so amenable to that demotion, or to seeing it as being long-term or permanent. And moreover, as true as it is that Yaakov, so to speak, demoted Reuven, removed him from the position of prominence, was he not equally harsh with Shimon and Levi? Shimon v'Levi achim, arur apam ki az, achakem b'Yaakov, etc. And that's an interesting question, because it's really the first three of the Shvatim who received harsh words, sharp words from Yaakov. So much so, as Rashi tells us in Parshas Vayechi, Yehuda started to hide because he's next and he didn't know what was coming until the bracha started to become more benign. But that's an interesting shaila, because if the first three Shvatim had been pushed aside, so how is it that Shevet number three, Levi, has returned? And the Kahuna and Leviim are from that Shevet. If they can do it, so why can't Reuven do it? Which is an interesting shaila. And this is felt keenly by those who care about these things, by people in the tribe of Reuven. But we can already see that the claim, or the basis of claim for Avodah, of Dasan and Avira, if they really are genuine, which they probably aren't, but whoever is genuine in that claim, that's at odds with Korach, because he doesn't care about Bnei Reuven. They don't care about him. And then enters a third group who don't care about either of the first two groups. And they are mentioned in Pasuk Beis. Vayokumu lifnei Moshe. They all rise up before Moshe. Vanashim ibnei Yisrael chamishim umasayim. Now we meet the third group. And they are these 250 men. And what do we know about them? They're Nisi'e Eda, they're princes of the congregation. Kriye Moed, men of calling. Anshe Shem, men of distinction. And what do they represent? From which tribe are they? We don't know. Pasuk doesn't say. We assume that they are from assorted tribes. Because they are coming with a completely different reasoning. Namely, by this stage, it shouldn't have to make a difference what tribe you're from in order for you to deserve to do the avoda. It should be down to each individual. If they are sufficiently of merit and sufficiently distinguished and sufficiently developed, so then that should be all you need. So it doesn't have to be from Levi and it doesn't have to be from Reuven. It's each person for their merits. That is a completely and categorically different argument than has been presented, but firstly by Korach and secondly by Dathan and Aviram. But what we do see is that each one, this is what they're taking. Korach takes the fact that he is Ben Yitzhar. Dathan and Aviram take the fact that they are Bnei Reuven. These 250 men take the fact that they are Nisi'e Moed and Nisi'e Eda, Kriye Moed, etc. So far, it sounds like they don't agree with each other at all. Yet somehow, they all form one group. How does that work? Says Pasuk Gimel, Vayikahalu al Moshe ve'al Aharon. You know how it works? Vayikahalu. They're a kahal, they're an assembly, they're together. But what brings them together? They have nothing in common in terms of what they want. The only thing they have in common is what they don't want. Namely, that Moshe and Aaron should be the ones in charge. But that is a very precarious alliance because they're only really unified by a common antagonist. But imagine if it could be that they would get rid of him and then it's just them. The very next day, they'll start to turn on each other because they're no longer unified by the one that they don't want. So it's only a question of what they do want, but they don't want the same thing. And Yesh Omrim, that it's for this reason that the Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim is depicted as Machlokas Korach V'Chol Adoso. Korach and his men, to teach you what? Sometimes, if there's an agenda, and if it's Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, there is as much a machlokas between Korach and his own men as there is between Korach and whoever it is on the other side. So on Sunday, they'll deal with Moshe, and then by Monday, they'll be at each other's throats. A trademark, again, of machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim is that there's as much machlokas exists within the quote-unquote united factions. They're being held together only in a negative sense by a common enemy. So then as soon as that should go, so then they become each other's enemy. So there's certainly a lot to ponder. And again, with many lahavdils, but it's we don't need to look very far to see examples of all of the above, none of which are bringing us much nachas or joy. With reference to Korach himself, to come back to Korach through the eyes of Rashi. Because whereas the Malbim seems to take at face value that Korach wants to be the Kohen Gadol, Rashi explains that Korach's desire to wage a machlokas with Moshe was triggered by something else, by the desire for something else. It starts off quite similar to the Malbim with the whole mishpachology of Amram and Yitzhar. How does it go? So this is in the first pasuk, in the opening pasuk, in the Dibur HaMaschil Dosan Va'aviram. And it's a long Dibur, but we'll just read a few lines to get a sense of how Rashi explains. Uma ra'a Korach lachlok im Moshe. So what does Korach see to strike up this machlokas with Moshe? Rashi explains, Niskane al Nisi Uso shel El Tzofan ben Uziel. He was jealous over the appointment as Nossi, as prince, The appointment was given to Eltzofen ben Uziel, Sheminohu Moshe Nasi al Bnei Kehas, al Pia Dibur. Hashem told Moshe to appoint Eltzofen over the family of Kehas, meaning Eltzofen ben Uziel, he's not the Nasi of the tribe of Levi, he's the Nasi of the family of Kehas. But Korach felt that should have gone to him. Why? So here's the cheshbon. Amar Korach. Korach says, Achei Abba Arba Ahayu. In my father's, as we mentioned before, in my father's generation, there were four brothers. They are Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. Amram HaBechor, so Amram is the oldest, says Korach. So if his sons want to take Gedula, they're the sons of Amram, I understand. Not Lushnei Bonav, Gedula. Both of his sons can take Gedula, one is a Melech and one's a Kohen Gadol. But then that's the end of Amram's sons. So who's next? Keep on going down the list. I'm next. Mira Oili Tolis Hashnia. Who's meant to then take the second position? Lo Ani. Not is it not me? Shani Ben Yitzhar Shu Sheni La Amram. I'm Yitzhar's son. He's second to Amram. But what did Moshe do? V'hu mina nosi es ben achiv akotan mikulam. But he appointed Eltzofen ben Uziel. Uziel is the fourth and youngest brother of that generation. Amram Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. The son of the youngest brother? That's a little bit too much for Korach. And therefore, says Korach, Hareini Cholik Alav, so I am going now to dispute Moshe's words, Umevatel es Devarav, and I will undo what he has said and done. So here is Korach not prepared to accept that these appointments are al pi hadibur, right, by description and instruction of Hashem. Rather, he thought that it's Moshe giving preference to family, and therefore, if family is first, he should have been first before Eltzofen ben Uziel, way before. But here's an interesting question. And that is, aside from the question of how does Rashi know that this is the motivation of Korach, which is a major discussion which we've had on other occasions, there's another important point here. According to Rashi, Korach is really jealous over the institution of Nasi. But he only ever talks about the position of Kahuna, just like everybody else. So he doesn't seem to be arguing his case. If he wants to be the Nasi, why does he say that he wants to be the Kohen? Now you could say, which I believe the Mizrahi says, which is very interesting, the trigger for the Machlokas was that he'd been overlooked and it had been given to Eltzofen ben Uziel. That was difficult for him. As my father Zatzal used to say, people prefer to be looked over than to be overlooked. So it came to Eltzofen ben Uziel, so that got him going. But once he got going to make a machlokas, so why not set his eyes on the higher prize of Kuna Gedola? That's how the Mizrahi explains. So again, what instigated the machlokas is that he felt that he had been hard done by with regards to the being Nasi. But if you're ready in it for machlokas, so in for a penny, you may as well go for gold. May as well go for the position of Kohen Gadol. But the Maharal is more inclined to understand, the Maharal in the Gur Aryeh, that all he ever wanted was the position of Nasi. But if that's the case, why does he never speak about it? Well, the answer is very simple. Because no one else cares whether Korach is the Nasi. The only people that care whether Korach is the Nasi are Korach and his wife, probably. But in terms of generally other people, there's not going to be a campaign to make Korach the Nasi because no one else feels strongly about it. So he needs a group. But his cause is not a cause that's of any interest to the group. But he knows there's another cause that is. It's called the Avoda. And therefore, Korach uses, he himself is not interested in the Avodah. He's not interested in taking Aaron's job. He wants the job of Nasi. But the momentum to get a faction who will then dispute and perhaps have a realistic chance of toppling Moshe's authority, that's not going to come from the campaign of Korach for president. It's going to come from the campaign of whoever wants the Avodah should get it. And therefore, he uses the drive for the Avodah as a vehicle through which to overthrow Moshe. With what in mind? If that succeeds, he doesn't want to become the Kohen, but one thing's for sure, he can become whatever he wants. And therefore, a grateful nation will then offer him the position of Nasi, and a humble Korach will graciously accept him. And that is a very terrifying idea, because what we're saying is Korach is prepared to try and undermine a major institution of Avoda that he doesn't even really care about, if the goal is to topple Moshe's authority on that and other matters, so that he will step in to be able to get what he wants. That is a scary thing. The amount of damage a Baal Machlokas is prepared to do in order to get what they want, even damage that has nothing to do with them. And this now made it very difficult for Moshe to remonstrate with Korach, because Korach is really camouflaging himself behind the Avoda. So Moshe can never really talk to him about what he really wants. If we assume, and we will see quite soon through Rashi, that Moshe knows that Korach doesn't want the Avoda. He knows that Korach wants to be the Nasi. No one else seems to have cottoned on to that, but Moshe has. But you can't debate him on that point, because no one's mentioned it. So Moshe, that's what's so tricky here. Moshe can't say to Korach, you should be satisfied, you know, someone else is the Nasi, and because Korach would say, no one's speaking about Nasi. I don't care about things like Nasi. I want the Avoda. And then he'll become all elevated and starry-eyed about the Avoda, and you can't even call him out, because he has very, very carefully concealed what it is that he actually wants. With all this, when it comes to the moment of truth, Moshe appraises Korach of the fact that he knows what it was that Korach was after all along. When Moshe calls for that famous sign that the land, the ground should open its mouth and swallow them up, and that is in... Pasuk Kavches, Perik Tetzayin Pasuk Kavches. We'll see how Rashi is consistent here in the precision of the way that he is writing. Vayomer Moshe. Moshe says, Bezos Teidun. Through this you will know, Ki Hashem Shlachani, that Hashem sent me. Lasos es kolam asim ha'ela, to do all these things. Ki lo milibi. It was not something that I made up by myself or just appointed whoever I wanted. And then he proceeds to outline, if the people die a natural death, then you can conclude Hashem didn't send me. If the ground opened its mouth, so then you'll know. But this Pasuk Kavches says, through this you'll know, this will verify that Hashem sent me to do all these things. Rashi comments on the words, La'asos es kol ha'ma'asim ha'ele, to do all these things. She'asisi al pi ha'dibur. They were all done under divine command. Lases la'aron kuna gedola, to give the kuna kohen gadol to Aaron. Uvonav segane kuhuna, his sons would be his deputies. Ve'el tzofon nasi ha'kahasi, and that el tzofon should be the nasi of kahas. That's interesting. Why is Moshe mentioning at this final juncture that you should know that everything was by divine command? Aaron is Kohen Gadol, his sons are also Kohanim, and El Tzofon is the Nasi of Kahas. Because here Moshe is saying, I could never discuss this with you because you never mentioned it, but I know that what you were really bothered by was not the fact that Aaron's a Kohen Gadol or that his sons are Kohanim, but that El Tzofon was the Nasi of Kahas. That's why Moshe says that Hashem sent me La'asos es kol ha'ma'asim ha'ela, all of these things. It wasn't just one thing that was being disputed as far as most people is concerned, it's the avoda. That's just one thing. Why is Moshe talking about kol hamasim? Because Moshe says, you never announced it and you never let on, but don't think that I didn't know that what you were disputing is something else entirely, namely the nesius of El Tzafon. So that's an important lesson with regards to the whole concept of machlokas. What you see on the surface as being the claim and that which is being sought after is not always the thing that people really want. And indeed, as Meshech Chachma points out, you know, Moshe, he asks for a very specific sign. And firstly, the terminology is very interesting. In Pasuk Kaftes, and let's really compare Pasuk Kaftes with Pasuk Lamed. So Kaftes says, Im kamos kol ha'adam yimusun eile, if these people just like die a normal death, ufukudas kol ha'adam yipaked alehem, and the things that visit other people are visited on them, then you can conclude, lo Hashem shlachani. And that's what's really being disputed. Has Hashem sent me or not sent me? Lo Hashem shlachani. You are entitled to conclude that Hashem didn't send me. However, v'imbriya yivra Hashem. But what if Hashem, let us translate in for now, b'riya yivra Hashem, Hashem will create a creation. Ufatasa ha'adama espiha, uv'ala osam eskala shelahem, and it will open its mouth and swallow them and all of them, v'yodai chayim she'ola, and they will go down alive into the depths. Vidatem, then you should know, ki niatsu ha'anashim ha'ela es Hashem, that these people have provoked and angered Hashem. Now, in the end, the ground opened its mouth, and therefore it's B. Of the two possibilities, A and B, it's B. But what's interesting is, these two don't exactly seem to be opposite to each other. Because if Moshe starts by saying, if they die a natural death, then you conclude Hashem didn't send me. But if not, then you must conclude that Hashem did send me. And I think, by the way, for what it's worth, that's how we would normally present the story in our own words. Moshe says, the sign that I really am an emissary of Hashem will come through this very dramatic way that they meet their end. So it sounds like the two possible conclusions are either Hashem hasn't sent me or he has sent me. But Moshe doesn't say that. In Kaftes, he says, if they die a natural death, Hashem hasn't sent me. But if the earth swallows them up, he doesn't say, then Hashem has sent me. Rather, it says, then you should know that these people have angered Hashem. So we see the currency of davar vihipucho, right, of the two possible conclusions, they're not exactly the same. And Meshech Chachma says the reason why is because there are more possibilities than just yes and no. Sometimes, what is the opposite of saying that of Hashem not sending Moshe? What's the alternative to that? Well, so we might say the alternative is that Hashem did send him, but actually the extreme alternative is more than that. The extreme alternative to Hashem not sending Moshe is not that Hashem has sent him, but rather Hashem has sent him and they knew that Hashem had sent him. And still they started a machlokas in order to provoke and incite Hashem. In other words, sometimes a person acts in a way that they because they don't know. And if they don't know which two possibilities are true, either A or B, so the only two alternatives are A or B, and they don't know. So either they're right or they're wrong. But even if they're wrong, they just didn't know. But not every mistake is an honest mistake. Some mistakes are dishonest mistakes. Because what if they did know and still they said Hashem didn't send? That's really in the opposite corner. And that's what Moshe is saying to the people. The two options here are not they say that Hashem didn't send me and they're right, or Hashem did send me and they just didn't realize that. No, they did realize. And that's Pasuk Lamed, V'idatem ki niyatsu ha'anashim ha'ele es Hashem. And why is it that this method of punishment is chosen? Ubalaha, and what is involved in such a thing? You know, it's a very interesting machlokus rishonim as to how to translate the words in Pasuk Lamed, v'imbriya yivra Hashem. We translate it, I think, on certainly the most straightforward level, the simplest level, if Hashem will create a creation. Interestingly, the Ibn Ezra does not translate those words in that way. According to the Ibn Ezra, the word Berea in this Pasuk does not refer to or should not be translated as creation at all. Rather, Bria means an incision, to cut. He quotes a Pasuk in Yechezkel, Uvara eshem becharvosam. They cut them with their swords. Now we know the word bara has two meanings. It means creation, or it means to cut. Okay. And of those two translations, says Ibn Ezra, the second one is the one that's being referred to here. If Hashem will make an incision in the ground and it will open its mouth. What we may ask would move the Ibn Ezra to what seemingly is the, not the intuitive or direct translation, or the common translation for sure of the word Bria. Why is he insisting on this other translation of incision and not just the normal translation of creation? Says the Ibn Ezra, very simply, because creation implies that this doesn't exist before. It's like a one-off thing. Is that so? I mean, what are we discussing effectively? We're discussing an earthquake. So if you say this is a Bria Yivra Hashem, as if to say this is an exceptional situation, a special creation, it sounds like barring this, you'll never find such a thing. But that's not true, says Ibn Ezra. We know of many instances where there were earthquakes and such like, and therefore I cannot see this as a Bria, as a creation. Which means that if the Pasuk uses the term Bria, it can only be in the second meaning, an incision in the ground. Not the first, not the last. That's a major statement in Parshanut. But he stated his case. It's not a one-off. Bria sounds like a one-off. However, the Ramban responds to Ibn Ezra. And the Ramban says, this was a one-off. It was not the first earthquake and it was not the last. But there was never one like this. For a simple reason, the way the Pasuk describes it, and any earthquakes that we're aware of, the earth moves and does what it does, and it does causes the damage that it does, and then that's basically the way that it stays. You never find an earthquake where you have the earthquake, and then it just goes back to the way it was before. But the point in Pasuk Lamed is, again, v'imbriya yivra Hashem, if Hashem will create a creation, ufatzatza adam es piha, the ground will open its mouth, uvala'a osam, and it will swallow them. In other words, in the same way that when you swallow something, so then after you've swallowed it, so the mouth is exactly the same as it was before and can close again. So that's what's happening here. And therefore, for the ground to swallow people up and then just go back to the way it was initially, that's unique. That is a unique creation, and that justifies the term Bria as creation. Interestingly, the Rosh, in his commentary on the Torah, comes to the defense, or at least explains the position of the Ibn Ezra. Namely, and it becomes a very nuanced discussion now, because for the Ibn Ezra, even if this was an unusual type of earthquake, the very fact that earthquakes as a concept already exist is not enough to call this a Bria, a new creation, because it's a unique variation on an existing creation. So that is a Rishonim's debate, whether a special type of an existing thing is called a new thing for the expression of Bria. Either way, this is the machlokas of Rimbriya Yivra Hashem. But what we do see is that Moshe calls for the sign. that the earth should swallow them up. That is to say, open, receive them, and swallow them up, so that they, it's like they're covered over again. And why is that? Says Meshech Chochmah, because the nefarious nature of this machlokas is not just that there was trouble, but for the main part, what they really wanted, and we're talking about Korach, Dasan, and Aviram, what they really wanted lay buried within them. And therefore the midah keneged midah is that their own punishment is that they get buried within something else. The whole point of what made this machlokas so difficult to deal with is that the prime movers and the prime protagonists, what they said they want was different than what they actually wanted, so it's impossible to remonstrate with them in terms of their real desires, because they're all very, very deeply embedded within them. So what is the comeuppance on such extreme carnage that they were prepared to cause is that they themselves remain embedded within the ground, covered up, as they did, so was done to them. That's how the Meshech Chochmah explains this particular sign of the ground opening up and swallowing them up again. Well, in the follow-up, and we'll end with a mitzvah discussion, in the follow-on from what happens with Korach, and also with those men who we didn't speak so much about them this week, with the fire pans, the machtos, which were then now put around the Mizbeach. And what's the goal of that? Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Hey. Let's have a look. Zikaron of Yisrael. So these machtos should be now coating the Mizbeach. Leman asher lo yikrav ish zar, asher lo mizera Aaron hu. That no one who's not from the family of Aaron should not come lakdir keteres lefnei Hashem to offer keteres or do the avoda as a Kohen. A non-Kohen should remember never to dispute the issue of kahuna. Velo yech Korach v'cha'adoso. And it should not be like Korach and his assembly. What is the meaning of the words velo yeyeh korach v'cha'adoso? There is a very interesting Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin daf Kufches, and the Gemara says, kol hamachzik b'machlokas, a person who holds onto a machlokas, which I guess conducts a machlokas, starts a machlokas, it's an interesting shaila. Is it osur to start a machlokas? It's certainly not v'havta l'recha kamocha, and it's certainly not a lot of things. But according to, it's a breach of shalom, according to the Gemara, it is a specific losase. He violates the prohibition. Where does the Torah say not to have machlokas? Because it says v'lo yecha korach v'chadoso. One should not be like Korach and his Eda. They were bali machlokas. V'lo yecha korach v'chadoso. You're not allowed to be like them. You can't be involved in machlokas. So says the Gemara. And that now is an interesting shaila, because the question is, how far does this idea go? As if to say, if we may ask, is this one of the 613 mitzvahs? Is this one of the 365 negative prohibitions? Asur to have a machlokas, as it says, v'lo yecha korach v'cha'adoso. This question is discussed by the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. As we mentioned a few times, before the Rambam starts to discuss the 613 mitzvahs, he has 14 preliminary discussions, what are known as the Sharoshim, in order to show his methodology. By what criteria something will be included in one of the Tariq mitzvahs or not. And there are essentially 14 criteria, what's known as the 14 Sharoshim. And in the eighth Sharish, the Rambam comes to discuss our question. And it is his opinion that this is not one of the 613 mitzvahs. And he prefaces by saying as follows, and this is the general principle. The word lo, which means no, doesn't always denote a prohibition. Sometimes It can denote what we'd call a negation. That it just that it won't be that way, so that it shouldn't be that way, but not it's forbidden for it to be that way. Sometimes a no is a prohibition, like lo silba shatnes, which is basically no, it's also to do it. You shall not do it. But sometimes the word lo is used not as a prohibition, but just as a description that something won't be. Lo yisagoy al goy cherev. It's a description of peaceful times. It's not a prohibition. And therefore, you always need to keep an eye on this, says Rambam. Whenever you see the word lo, and as soon as you see the word lo, so in terms of mitzvah, oh, is this a prohibition? That's an important question to ask. Well, is it a prohibition or is it a negation? In his words, or the Hebrew words of the Sefer Mitzvahs, is it an azhara, prohibition, or a shalila, just saying that it will not be a negation? And it's for this reason, says Rambam, that when the pasuk, our pasuk says, "V'lo yeka korach v'chadoso," I don't think it's a prohibition. I think it's a negation. It won't be. Not that it's osur to be like Korach, but it won't be like Korach. And I'll prove it to you, says Rambam. Because if you look in the Medrash explains that these words, that it will not be like Korach and his Edah, means that if anyone should ever dispute the Kahuna in the future, the Pasuk is saying, what will happen to them is not what happened to Korach. Don't think that they'll get swallowed up or burnt or whatever. Something else will happen to them, one who disputes the Kahuna. Namely, they'll get Saras. This happened with Uzziah. Uzziah, one of the kings, and he wanted to become the Kohen, and it didn't work, and he got Saras, as the Navi describes. Where is Saras mentioned in our Pasuk? Because how does it conclude? Kasher diber Hashem biyad Moshe, lo, as Hashem spoke with Moshe's hand. Moshe's hand was the first thing ever to receive Saras at the burning bush. And that is the Medrash. So to summarize what the Medrash is saying, that here we are, these people disputed Aaron's position as Kahuna, and they got burnt or swallowed up. Should anyone do that in the future, lo yeka Korach v'chadoso, they will not be like Korach. What will happen to them will be different than Korach. Rather, what will happen is, like what happened to Moshe's hand, kasher diber Hashem biyad Moshe lo. This Medrash actually is quoted by Rashi on our Pasuk. And therefore, you see how different, coming back to the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, you see how different this Medrash is, because it's a negation. It's saying, and it won't be. It won't be like Korach. It will be different. But it's won't be is not the stuff of prohibitions. Prohibitions is they shall not. And therefore, you see from this Medrash that it's not really a prohibition, and that's why I wouldn't count it as one of the 613 mitzvahs. And my support is that Medrash about Moshe's hand and Saras. Now, when the Rambam wrote the Sefer HaMitzvahs, he was not alone for very long, because he very shortly afterwards, a few decades later, attracted the critical commentary of the Ramban, what's known as the Hasagos HaRamban. And wherever the Ramban feels the Rambam took a wrong turn, he'll let you know. And here's one of those times. Says Ramban, I cannot believe that the Rambam threw in his lot here with the Medrash, with the Medrash's explanation of the words v'lo yeka Korach, that it won't be like Korach, rather it will be a different punishment, and not like the Gemara, which is a very direct rendering of those words. You shall not be like Korach. How can you compare the two? I mean, there's room for all of them in the broader spectrum, but if you have to choose what you think is the more direct explanation, the Rambam chose the Medrash's understanding that it won't be like Korach, it will be like Tzaras, and where's Tzaras? It's Moshe's hand. I mean, that's very, very less direct than the Gemara. I'm very, very surprised that the Rambam took his direction, if it's clear what we're saying, from the Medrash that it's a negation rather than the Gemara that it's a prohibition. The Gemara seems to be much more direct. And it really is a bit of a puzzle. But interestingly, the Rambam himself has already addressed this question, as again pointed out by Meshe Chochma and others, because later in the Sefer Mitzvahs, in negative prohibition number 45, the Rambam says as follows. When it comes to the 613 mitzvahs, and this is a major principle now, sometimes you have a pasuk, and it can mean many things, and there's room for all of them. But for something to be part of the 613 mitzvahs, it has to be the primary meaning of the word, what's called gufei dekra, the primary meaning, and then secondary meanings, they can all be d'oraisa, but they will not be in the Sefer HaMitzvahs as the mitzvah. And in fact, even when both meanings are prohibitions, but the primary meaning will be the mitzvah. What's an example? The pasuk says lo tisgodedu in Parshas Re'eh. Lo tisgodedu, a person shouldn't inflict wounds upon themselves as a sign of excessive mourning. That's a negative prohibition, no question about it. And that's the mitzvah. Now you may know, says Rambam, there's a drasha on the word lo tisgodedu. Namely, lo tasu agudos, agudos. Shouldn't be factions. Agudos, agudos. Says Rambam, that's not one of the 613 mitzvahs. Because even though it is a d'oraisa drasha, and however you understand it, and you have to know its parameters, etc., it's an isser d'oraisa, but that's a secondary interpretation. There is no doubt that the primary interpretation is, lo tisgodedu, is about inflicting wounds. That then takes its place as the mitzvah in the world of Taryag mitzvahs. And the Rambam says, and I'll give you another example, and he comes to our pasuk, v'le'er kekorach v'chadoso. I know, says Rambam, there is a Gemara which says if you're a Bal Machlokas, if you have a Machlokas, it's a Lo Sase, but that's not the primary meaning. The primary meaning is very, very simple. People should remember what happened to Korach so that they don't repeat his mistake. V'lo yeka Korach b'chadosa. That's not a prohibition. It's so that it shouldn't happen. It's a negation. And therefore, the simple, simple meaning is plate the Mizbeach with these machtos so that people should see them and so that they shouldn't be like Korach. It's a negation, a shlila. And says Rambam, and proof that it's a negation is this medrash, which then says, and if they do, what will happen to them won't be like Korach. In other words, it's a delicate point here. The Rambam isn't saying that medrash, that if subsequently someone will dispute kahuna, he'll get saras. He's not saying that medrash is the primary interpretation. But in the same way, that medrash supports the idea that we should be heading in the direction of shalila, of negation, much more than the Gemara, that it's a prohibition. And therefore, once I have the support from the medrash in its own way, that it's a negation, that it won't be, so I'm comfortable, says Rambam, saying that the simplest meaning is actually not like the Medrash and not like the Gemara, but just the Pasuk saying, make a remembrance so that people won't repeat his mistake and so that what happened to Korach won't happen to anyone else. So these are, we see how much is invested in these questions of Taryag, and we emerge with these important principles. What does the word lo mean? Does it always mean the same thing? Does it always mean a prohibition like lo til b'shatnos? Can it sometimes mean it's just that it won't happen, a prediction, lo yisah goy al goy cherev? What are the criteria for inclusion into the Taryag mitzvahs? The notion that you can have a primary meaning of a pasuk and a secondary meaning, they're both the oraisa, but one of them is the mitzvah and the other is a drasha. Just to conclude, one final word with regards to machlokas l'shem shamayim, which I think is very apropos. The Mishnah says, machlokas l'shem shamayim sofa l'hiskayim. In the end, it will endure. If it's shenol l'shem shamayim, ein sof l'hiskayim, it won't endure. It seems counterintuitive. After all, one would have expected the opposite. Tell me the good news. If it's l'shem shamayim, so then it will die out soon. If it's not l'shem shamayim, you'll never hear the end of it. So why does the Mishnah say it backwards? So Shlomo Zalman Orbach said that what it means is it comes back to what we said in the beginning. If the machlokas l'shem shamayim people are focused on the topic at hand, not on the other side. So the machlokas will endure because the focus will remain on the issue that's being discussed until it's sorted out. But if the machlokas is shelo l'shem shamayim, ein sof l'iskayim, pretty soon the machlokas won't even be about that topic anymore. It will just have its own energy. People get sucked in into this whole inferno, and people might not even remember what the machlokas was about in the first place because it's taken on a life of its own. And ein sof l'iskayim. Go figure out what the machlokas was about, because you haven't heard about it recently. It's been all about the mudslinging from over different things entirely. And that's the art of machlokas l'shem shamayim. Machlokas is encouraged as long as the sofa l'iskayim. Be sure the focus is on the idea itself, as we expressed it, on what is right and not on who is right. And tamidei chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. The more we argue in the purest sense of the word, with the best of intentions, the more we can take all the machlokas in the world, put it into that, and hopefully draw it away from other things in the hope of increased shalom ba'olam, which of course is something that we so sorely need. So sorely need. We'll leave it over there for this evening. I wish you a good night, a good week. I wish you have a service, tovus, leklal v'lefrat.